Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to the ID the Future podcast. This is Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute, Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. And we have with us today Dr. Scott Chambers, who is a material scientist and a signer of our Descent from Darwinism list, as well as a scientific researcher. And Dr. Chambers, it's very wonderful to have you in the studio with us today.
Thank you, Casey.
Well, I'd like to have you share with us, as we've had various other scientists on our show before, to share with us about what type of scientific work you do, and also talk with us about why you are a skeptic of Darwinian evolution. So, first of all, what kind of work do you do as a scientist?
My group is interested in the growth and properties of crystalline oxide materials. So we grow epitaxial, which means essentially crystalline films of different kinds of metal oxides, and we're interested in the properties of them, magnetic, optical, chemical, electronic, and the relationship between those properties and their structure and composition.
Okay, and where do you work?
Pacific Northwest National Laboratory.
And that's here in the state of Washington, is that correct?
Okay. In the Tri-Cities.
All right, great. And what got you interested in the debate over evolution?
I was a sophomore at the University of California at San Diego, and I was taking...
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's my alma mater. Okay.
Interesting. I was taking a molecular biology class, and in the very first chapter, there was a statement in there by the author saying something to the effect of Darwinism is an accepted fact for everybody except the fundamentalist religious minority whose thinking is not based on logic but on doctrinary adherence to religious principles.
And, oh, wow.
And I read that. And I thought, that doesn't sound quite right. And my roommate and I, who were both in the same class, had a term paper assignment. And so we decided that we were going to, for our term papers, we were going to tackle the origins question. And so we started reading books on it. And I read The Creation of Life by A.E. Wilder Smith. This is the first book I ever read on the subject. And it really, really got me thinking about the issues, about the credibility, scientific credibility of neo-Darwinism.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first entry into the field many years ago.
Okay, well, that was probably, what, like 1999?
Oh, okay, 1970.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Okay, well, that sounds like an experience that I can recall having at UCSD. Not always very friendly towards skepticism of Darwinian evolution, although you'd be surprised. There are a few here and there. They're just hiding out, and they aren't always comfortable being public. So you got interested in this debate in college. Did you then actually continue to investigate it over the years, or
Yes. What
happened with your train of thought on this issue?
I did continue to read everything I could about it. I was fascinated in it, and I would watch debates. Russ Doolittle at UC San Diego would debate Dwayne Gish from the Institute of Creation Research, and I would go to those and watch the exchange. But then when I was a first-year graduate student, I was asked to give a lecture on the subject at the student union in the evening, and that was my first opportunity to really try to pull some things together. And I did that, and it was very interesting, and there was quite a bit of opposition to my speaking on the subject, but I didn't let that bother me.
Is that right? Well, was there opposition in terms of people just disagreeing with you, or did they actually simply try to prevent you from speaking?
I had a couple of other fellow graduate students who are in the biological sciences come up and literally corner me and tell me in no uncertain terms that they did not appreciate me even raising these issues.
Wow. So things were pretty hostile even back then.
Yes. Early 70s, yes.
Wow,
yes.
Wow. Well, the more things change, the more things stay the same,
yes.
It sounds like. Very interesting. And on a scientific level, Dr. Chambers, why are you a skeptic of Darwinian evolution? What are the scientific reasons that you give?
At a very high level, biological systems are high information systems.
Mm-hmm.
And in our experience as human beings, every time we find a high information system, we know that it had an intelligent source. And so when you look at the human genome, for instance, with its 3.1 billion genetic letters, to me, it is absolutely incredible, lacking credibility, that could possibly be the result of an accident, of a series of accidents over time.
Yeah.
That is, in a nutshell, that is the reason that I think neo-Darwinism is not credible intellectually.
And I know that you also are not a young earther, and you have, I've heard you talk actually about some actually evidence for the design of the universe from the Big Bang cosmology.
Yes.
Do you see evidence, or can you explain that to us, the evidence that you see for the design of the universe?
Yes, it's overwhelming. The fine-tuning is amazing, and I think about, for instance, the the rate at which the universe is expanding and has expanded over time and how fine-tuned that is, something like a part in 10 to the 55.
Wow.
Such that it doesn't either expand too quickly so that you can't get galaxy formation or that it turn around and collapse on itself because of gravitational pull. That, to me, that sort of thing, and then the fundamental constants of physics, the nuclear strong force, for instance, the ratio of the mass of the electron to the mass of the proton, everything literally has the appearance of fine-tuning, and fine-tuning just smacks of design.
Wow. Now, well, you just raised a point regarding the expansion rate of the universe that I think actually responds to an objection that is common when you make fine-tuning arguments, and people will say, well, maybe life doesn't have to be exactly as life is found on Earth. Maybe there are other forms of life that it could exist in other universes, such that the odds of getting a universe that can sustain, you know, some different type of life might not really be all that low. Maybe there's lots of different types of life out there. But what you're saying is that to even basically get matter or a place to have life within a galaxy, are you saying that, you know, even that period is extremely unlikely when you understand the physics behind the universe?
So I think what you're referring to is the idea of a multiverse, which is parallel universes that came into existence early on. And there are really two fundamental problems with that. One, we don't have any observational evidence for any universe other than our own.
Yes.
And secondly, if you think about the implications of the multiverse model, the universe that we have ought to be just barely adequate to support life. Mm. And so things like good tasting food and bright colors and so forth ought not to happen. Mm. And yet the world that we live in is a fabulous place to live, and I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. And I think that the obvious conclusion, the one that first comes to mind, is that of design, and that the multiverse is a way of squirming around that, seems to me.
Yes, I agree. Let's switch gears a little bit here. It's really great to learn about some of the scientific evidence that has convinced you of your position. What about schools? How do you think that this issue should be dealt with in schools?
I think students deserve to be told the truth about the problems that exist with neo-Darwinism. Mm. And right now, they are brainwashed in one form or another, I believe. And some teachers do a better job of it than others as far as trying to help students understand the realities of neo-Darwinism, but many don't. Mm. And I think that's really unfortunate. And one of the excuses that's given by people who would want to indoctrinate students is that, well, they're not smart enough, they're not mature enough intellectually to be able to understand the subtleties of the debate. I think that's not right. I think students are, because I have taught many students of various ages on this subject, and they're perfectly capable of understanding the issues. So I think that the issues ought to be presented in an open and above board way.
How do the students feel when they're told that they're not smart enough to understand the debate over evolution?
I taught a high school class about a year and a half ago, and one of the students just said, well, that's really insulting. And I said, it is really insulting. You guys you can understand this. You bet we can.
Sure. And I think the Darwinists who make this argument, they know that that's just a pretext for, they just don't want students to hear about this evidence. They know students are smart enough.
I mean, I think that's
right. For goodness sakes, if you can learn about the evidence for a theory, you should be smart enough to learn about the evidence against a theory. And,
yes.
And they're certainly in favor of teaching the students evidence about that's in favor of evolution. So anyway, how about persecution? I mean, there's a lot of talk these days with the movie Expelled coming out next year and a lot of the just incidents that have been in the news talking about the persecution or marginalization of scientists that have stood up and questioned Darwinism. I guess my first question is, have you ever witnessed or experienced any marginalization or persecution towards Darwin skeptics in the scientific realm that you're willing to discuss publicly?
I have not personally been on the receiving end of much of that. I think part of the reason is that I'm in the physical sciences.
Okay.
And I think it's different for us compared to people in biological sciences. But secondly, I've tended to do my research and try and do it well, and then speak about origins on the side. I haven't focused on origins as a research topic ever. But I know people who have, and I think it is very, very unfortunate what has happened to certain people in recent history on that. Because these are very, very good scientists that have been treated very poorly because of their views on origins.
Sure, sure. What advice would you give to a young scientist who's in grad school or just starting off in their career in science, maybe post-grad school even, who's a scientific skeptic of evolution? What would you tell them to do?
I think I would say be the very best that you can at your science. Do the very best research that you can possibly do. And when you make a statement on origins, and I'd encourage people to do that, mm-hmm. make sure it's well thought out, yes. rational, well yes. researched, and let it stand on its own.
Yeah,
you may
yeah.
catch some heat for it, but that's life.
Sure, sure. I mean, that was pretty bold when you were a graduate student yourself, that you were actually giving talks on your campus about problems of evolution. You caught flack from other graduate students, but thankfully doesn't sound like anybody who actually had control over whether or not you would graduate was trying to attack you for what
no,
you're
No, thankfully that never happened.
Yeah, but of course those biology graduate students, they're probably now faculty members somewhere, so
well
you wouldn't
be.
Want to be their graduate student, I don't
right?
think. Yeah. Very interesting. Well, it is so interesting that I've experienced many times in this field that biology seems to be much more hostile than other fields. Although we're witnessing now that some of the most recent incidents of harm to the careers of scientists come from the physics or the engineering community. I'm thinking of Guillermo Gonzalez yes. not getting tenure at Iowa State. Some of his co-faculty are actually admitting they didn't vote for his tenure simply because he supports intelligent design.
Yes.
And then now we have Robert Marks at Baylor University. His position, I believe, is Distinguished Professor of Electrical Engineering. So we're not talking about biologists here. Is it possible that this issue is becoming more and more politicized such that fields outside of biology are becoming more hostile than they used to be?
It certainly comments? Appears to be that way. And I've read Guillermo Gonzalez's book, The Privileged Planet. I'm rereading it now since his tenure decision hit the press. It's a yeah. it's a scholarly book. It's extremely well done. And to me, there is no excuse for him not getting tenure at Iowa State. And I've looked at his publication list. It's right there.
Yeah.
He's a good scientist, and it's a double standard.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I couldn't agree with you more. One last comment I think it just struck me. You used the word brainwashed earlier to describe what's happening in some schools today. And I don't typically use that kind of language myself because it's a little bit just rhetorically very strong, maybe a little stronger than I'd like to use. But you're not the first scientist to use that word on this podcast, actually. We've had a couple scientists, I think, that have actually used the word brainwashed to describe the way they view education today and the way it deals with evolution. I mean, what's going on? How is it that educate? Because you work in academia, you're actually an adjunct professor at the University of Washington right here in Seattle.
Yes.
I mean, educators they're supposed to be teaching students how to think, and they don't teach students how to think on this subject of evolution. They teach them what to think. So what's going on?
It's not just evolution. It's a number of subjects. It's pretty much any politically correct subject.
Okay.
It's not open for discussion. There is a party line at many universities, and if you dare speak against it, you're in for trouble. And it's such an antithesis of what a university is supposed to be. Yeah. And it's all agenda-driven, I believe. It is professors who are far more interested in pushing their own ideology than they are in training students.
Mm, wow. Well, hopefully this can change. We appreciate you being a scientist, quite a distinguished one at that, who's willing to speak up in favor of the facts and students receiving those facts. So thank you very much for being on our show today, Dr. Scott Chambers.
My pleasure, Casey.
Well, this is Casey Luskin speaking from Seattle, Washington with the ID of the Future podcast. Thanks again for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Finn. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.